Jeff Jarvis, man of many media. You've been there, you've seen everything from Olympus. Measure the effect. What kind of transformation are we talking about in blog media?
I think blogs will have a revolutionary effect on media. The internet is the first medium owned by its audience. In all prior media, somebody, publisher, editor, producer, writer, told the audience what they thought the audience, in good faith, ought to know. This is the first medium where the audience gets to tell everybody else what they think and what they want to know. That's crucially important. Now, weblogs come along as the highest form thus far invented of audience content. And you can get in trouble for calling it an audience or calling it content. The heck with that. Let's just say it's audience content. Before that, there were forums and chats and all that, and they would sometimes get a little bit anarchical and crazy. It was Saturday night at a bar. But a weblog is better, first, because it's a person's own space that they tend for and care about and put their name or their brand behind. The second reason it's better is because the links mean that the quality rises to the top. And so what you have now is the internet is the medium owned by its audience, but weblogs give that audience a voice. And it's the wise publisher and politician and business who will listen to that voice. We do a lot of talk about whether these institutions should start weblogs. That's not the issue. The issue is that they should be reading the weblogs that are already out there and listening to their constituencies.
So Shade Sylvester Dyson, who said to me yesterday, no, don't invest in the companies, invest in the idea.
Yeah, I think that what's important there, when we on Advanced Internet, we started our forums, we found that things that now seem logical but at the time were counterintuitive. The most popular forums were the obscure things like high school wrestling. Why? Because they weren't getting the attention and the ink in the paper. So here was a place where people could come and have the attention, give themselves the attention they deserved. And that's what the internet is really about. And it's not about replacing the present medium in the same model. It's not about who's biggest. Everything's a niche. Every interest and every need can now be served online. And the nichification of America that started with the remote control and the VCR now explodes. And now everybody has their space and everybody has their interest. And I think that's a good thing. I think choice is a wonderful thing. It makes the media landscape extraordinarily confusing for both media companies and especially for advertisers who are going to try to reach these audiences. But for the audience, it's a beautiful thing, because it means that they can find their own space, find their own interests, and find their own voice.
We're talking about unconstructing, deconstructing the mass.
The problem we have is I don't know what to call it anymore. It's not an audience because the audience is the writer. The writer is the editor, as Jay Rosen from NYU said. And so I'm not sure what to call it. But yeah, I don't think mass is a bad word. As TV critic, I was always defending the taste of the mass audience. Given a chance to watch good TV shows, you know what? We watch them, and the ratings prove that. If you give us nothing but crap to watch, then they will rise to the top of the ratings. And we get tired of our fads. We, the people, you have to have faith in the people. I'm a rabid populist now, in a representative democracy form, because, first, of my TV criticism, but second, most importantly, because of the internet and because of weblogs and forums.
Can you be both, Jeff? I mean, can you be a fan of the mass entertainment on three exclusive networks and of the incredible diversity, chaos, fun, individuality of the web?
Yes, because what happens is that the things that turn out to be good on the mass networks are good because people watch them, and they rise because people watch them. Bill Cosby, whose show turned into a bunch of sermonizing crap, but it was brilliant. Bill Cosby, I argue, started the real golden age of TV. The golden age of TV was not vaudeville. The golden age of TV started 15 years ago when good shows rose to the top of the ratings. And to think that the masses don't have taste is the essential insult to all of us. And so Hill Street Blues and Cosby led to The Sopranos. And quality could rise, and quality could succeed, and quality could be profitable. And how? Because they listened to the audience. Because when there was more choice and you had to compete for that audience, how did you do it? With quality. And it's working. And the internet is an extension of that.
Okay, Jeff Jarvis, inventory some of the effects of what you are calling a revolutionary medium in terms of winners, in terms of losers, in terms of social effects, in terms of new stars, in terms of new opportunities, both for investment or expression or politics. Take off your list of the effects of all this.
It's a great question. And so I'll start free form in a creak of consciousness here and see if I can list them. I'll start with Elizabeth Spires going from a career in finance to starting a weblog to being the writer of Gawker.com, which was Nick Denton's great New York gossip blog. And her voice was so strong and so good there that New York Magazine just discovered her and hired her as a writer on the magazine. And hired her not only to write for the magazine, which is great first. Here's somebody who 1 year ago was unknown, became the, pardon the sexist language, but it's the way we talk, it girl of New York media in less than a year. The second important thing that came out of that was that New York Magazine has hired her not only to write for the magazine, but also to start a weblog, because they want to be part of the party. So media is getting it. The New York Times is watching weblogs and is trying to figure out how to use them for the presidential campaign. My sites at Advanced Internet are putting weblogs in all of our sites, and I'm trying to use them to get us down to a town level of coverage, hyper-local coverage that we couldn't otherwise afford to do. So media is getting affected hugely. Politics is getting affected hugely. Look at Howard Dean and all of the hay that he's made out of having a weblog. He's made a lot of money. He's turned that straw into gold. He's also gotten a lot of attention. He's also set forth a vision of himself, true or not, that he's a man of the people, by listening to the people, by interacting with the people. So politics it has a huge impact on. It'll have a big impact on marketing. The first impact is that it'll be marketers at ad agencies scratching their heads and saying, how the hell do I buy this? Where's my return on investment? They won't know what the heck they're doing. But if they follow the precepts of Chris Locke and Gonzo Marketing, they'll learn that what they can really do is now interact with their audience in a different way. That they can come along, if you're a food company, if you underwrote the weblog done for the Julia project by Julie Powell, you would have said to the audience of that great project about cooking Julia Child's recipes, we like this too. And that means we have taste. And that's Chris Locke's point. And I think that marketers will discover how to use weblogs. And then finally, in communication, it's going to affect the family. When you get down to it, a weblog is, once again, nothing but a publishing tool. Well, you can publish a lot of things with that. You can publish a shopping list. So now I can publish a shopping list, and I can get to it from my mobile phone from the road, and so can my wife, and so can my kids. Or I can publish my photos so my parents can see them, and we don't send them prints all the time. It's changing the family. It's changing media. It's changing politics. It will change government, which will come next. It's going to change marketing, which is slow in coming because that's the way that industry works. And it's going to have an impact on the family, a good impact.
I'm glad you mentioned Julia. She's one of my favorite instances. Not only she's a lovely person and a great writer, but there was a girl, artistic spirit in a boring job, who found in desperation a device, kind of a contrived thing. Cook all of Julia Child's recipes in 1 year, got attention, got a huge New York Times write-up, big book contract, wonderful interview with me on the way too. I mean, there's a life that has found itself.
If you're looking for the new entrepreneurial spirit out of the internet today, look at this kind of individual content. Look at the ability at this tool that is as good as free. Means that if you have a good idea, you can, if it's a media property, whether it's print or photo or sound or video, you can come out and you can broadcast it to the world. To the world.
Let me catch on that. To the world, you say, but Julie Powell may be talking to, 5,000-10,000 people, and they're all over the world, and they're intense, and they're activists, and they're connectors. But in terms of traditional mass marketing and mass media that you know well, it's nothing.
Well, no, I disagree, because we're looking at it with that mass media, that old media lens on.
Cost per million, that kind of thing.
Change the glasses. And instead say a couple things. Number one is, I argue with some people who say, well, the number one most popular weblog, Glenn Reynolds, is twice as popular as the next, and twice as popular as the next, and pretty soon, very fast, the 10th most popular is pretty small. That's not the way to look at it. You're not trying to create the next People magazine. The way to look at weblogs is it's the collection of the niches that add up to a huge force. So if you look at just the Julia weblog about food, yeah, it has a certain size. If you look at all the weblogs that love food, now you're getting into an audience that has some real size. But let's also look at how big is big, how big is meaningful. I used to write for People magazine and TV Guide. I had an audience that supposedly, though they may have turned the page on me, could be as high as 25 million people. Now I write a weblog where on a good day I get a couple thousand in there. And on one hand, I look at that and say, ooh, ooh. But on the other hand, I go to my little congregational church on Sunday and I see the minister up there who worked his tail off writing a sermon for an audience of 60. So I have a much larger audience than he has, and he worked a lot harder on what he did for them. And so, you know, your audience really depends on who you're trying to speak to and what you're trying to say. And I don't think we should measure it anymore in terms of one property being huge. No, this is about a lot of people doing a lot of things. Measure it that way, and this is huge.
Huge in the sense of irresistible to advertisers?
Not yet, but it's going to have to be, because it is a beautiful... Google is the first in. And what Google found out in putting AdWords, AdSense rather, onto weblogs and to other small internet properties is that it is a magnificent targeting opportunity. So Matt Howey, who was a pioneer blogger, came along. He wanted to try a new tool, TypePad. And when he started his... I'm told this story. I haven't talked to him myself. But he wanted to try TypePad, and he said, what should I do a blog on? Ah, I like my TiVo. I'll do a PVR, personal video recorder blog. Boom. The guy is supposedly making up to, here, $100 a day with ads from Google. Why? Because there are advertisers going into Google trying to sell TiVos. And so he doesn't have much traffic. He has, you know, a few thousand page views in a day. He has a small audience. But that starts to be pretty amazing pretty quickly. And I think that advertisers will realize that when you look upon this as a targeting mechanism, number one, and as a relationship mechanism, number two, they will find that this is a very important way to market.
Jeff, there have got to be losers in this game. Where is all this success coming out of, away from?
I think that it's not just weblogs making losers elsewhere, but I think it is this nicheification effect having an impact across. So the big three networks of TV are losing audience. TV as a whole is losing audience. Print has already lost some audience. You know, younger people in markets aren't reading newspapers, and a lot of newspapers are trying to reach them in new ways. In Chicago, the Tribune and the Sun-Times both have print products aimed at a young audience. I think that there's going to be reshuffling of that audience and that marketplace. I don't know that any of them get killed off. We're in an age in America when every industry goes through restructuring. So what we really are in is restructuring. The steel industry had a restructure. The auto industry had a restructure. Well, now media is restructuring in great measure because of the internet. It just means that everything's shifting. But big media companies like mine are heavily into the internet. So, you know, we're involved in both. And that doesn't mean that we lose so much as we shift.
For the Newhouse empire, Advance, how does the New Yorker magazine or Vanity Fair say, which I read, deal with this?
It turns out that the internet is a spectacular means of selling subscriptions. And it works really, really well. It worked from the earliest days of Epicurious, our food site that's backed up by great content from Gourmet and Bon Appetit. We found very early on that new readers were discovering those magazines and subscribing to those magazines by the thousands because they discovered the great recipes online. You're reaching a new audience, it's a new way to market, and that's really the key to what that is. You also can establish an ongoing relationship with that market, and you can sell advertising to the audience that's online, and you can have joint deals with print. But first and foremost, it's a new way to attract new readers, and that's a great thing. The publishing industry needs that these days because newsstand distribution is a mess. The old stamp sheets, the Ed McMahon stuff, are not really around to sell subscriptions anymore. And so there have to be new ways to sell subs, and that turns out to be online.
Will the New Yorker, will Vanity Fair go the blog way?
I can't speak for what their plans would be. The only place where we've done it actively is on the newspaper side, the newspaper-related side. The newspapers themselves aren't starting weblogs yet so much as our online sites that are affiliated with the newspapers are starting weblogs. And we're allowing the audience to come in and start weblogs, and it's still so early, we're going to figure out how this works.
The Boston Globe has a blogger, you know, in the stands in the baseball playoffs. The New York Times has a columnist, Nick Kristof, doing a blog, and they're thinking about a Boys on the Bus campaign blog. What do you expect from them?
I'm not sure what's more important. For the big institutions, whether that's a newspaper or whether that's a presidential candidate to blog, or whether it's more important for them to read blogs. I tend to think that the first place to start for these big institutions is to notice what the audience is saying. We've had our time in the sunlight. We've had our chance to say everything we want to say, and we continue to have that chance because we have the power of the printing press. Well, now everybody has a printing press. So job one is to find the way to point attention to those people and make them the star. And there is no more them or us. It's all us now. And so that's job one. As part of that, yes, we should be starting blogs because it's smart. It's a form that everybody knows. It's a great tool. Big institutions should do that. But I think that's almost a lesser focus.
Lesser than what?
Than paying attention to the audience. The internet gives the chance to make the audience shine, makes the audience the star. So the audience is out there doing their weblogs and creating these things. The first job is to point to them. That's hard to do. I'm used to journalists who work for me creating a weblog, and they're used to writing and telling the audience stuff. And I'm saying, no, links, you got to link out. And they do that now. And then they realize what happens is as soon as you link out, somebody links back. It's a conversation. It's an entirely new relationship with your readers. The readers are your writers, you know, and that's a great new thing.
On a scale of 1 to 10, what kind of transformation are we talking about?
Depends on the industry. I think that in the media industry, this is right now probably about a 3. It'll very quickly be an 8. I think in marketing, it's right now about a 1, and it'll soon be an 8. Politics, it's now running about a 5. Politics is paying attention quickly. I think politics may, in the long run, still be a little scared of this, and it'll end up being about a 6.
This is fascinating. Last question from me. What are your favorite discoveries of voices, surprises, new relationships that you've made through blogs?
My absolutely favorite story from weblogs is the revolution that occurred in Iran in weblogs. One man who calls himself Hoder at Hoder.com started a weblog and then explained to fellow Iranians how to do a weblog and also explained how to use something called Unicode to write in Farsi. Suddenly, 20,000 or more, it's probably more now, 20,000 webloggers in Iran are doing what they cannot do. We keep on talking about how we have an American media revolution in weblogs. Well, to hell with that revolution. There's a real revolution happening online in weblogs in Iran. It's inspiring. And they're not just talking about politics. They're talking about all the things that they can't talk about. They're talking about sex and rock and roll and cultural life and politics and women's rights. And it's phenomenal. And so that's the first most important thing. The second thing that happened was they also realized that this is an opportunity to speak to the rest of the world. So Iranian bloggers are pressuring each other to blog in English because they'll notice that media people and bloggers elsewhere in the world can then read that and will then notice that and will then see their story that can't get out. My view of Iran was set in the 70s with the hostage crisis. It changed utterly by meeting these Iranians online through their weblogs. I heard what they had to say. I got to know them as people. They got to know me. We didn't agree about everything. We certainly disagreed about the Iraq War. But it was phenomenal to meet these people and to know what's what. And I got a whole new view of them. That only could happen in weblogs. That's a personal relationship set up across the world that could have never happened before. And that's really revolutionary.
Jeff Jarvis, this is hugely interesting, and so are you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's been fun.